Blog Talk Radio.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
The Eagles are headed to the Super Bowl.
Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable 2014 College Football Week 1 Show, brought to you by www.southbeachshopping.com, the online shopping network of the Philly Press Box Radio College Football Network. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partners, college football national expert Terry House, and Penn State and Big Ten expert and the tackle on the 1994 Penn State offense, considered by many as the greatest offense in the history of college football, the Goon, Keith Conlon. Welcome, gentlemen. We had an interesting week, first week of the season. What do you think, Terry?
We did, Bill. Lots of interesting games, and really the only constant that we have in a very fluid game that is college football is you never know what you're going to get until you strap on the helmets and play the games. Obviously a very cyclical game, you know, in general, with rosters changing so much year to year. And it's just one of the many reasons why we love college football and one of the many reasons that the first week of the season is so much fun and we sure have a lot to talk about.
Keith, what was your take off the first week?
You're exactly right. There's a lot to talk about. A lot of stuff went on this weekend. You know, starting with a 5:45 a.m. wake-up call for me and heading down to watch the Penn State game. I mean, there's nothing better than watching football at 8:30 in the morning with a nice cold Guinness in front of you and a plate of potatoes and bacon and pancakes. So
there you go.
The way that kicked off the day at 8:30, and you know, I looked at my watch at one point and I was a little tipsy, and I'm watching the game and it's 12:45, and I'm like, oh my god. what a great day. You know, got some great games in the mid-afternoon, some great early evening games, and then in the evening was just amazing. You know, watching the end of the night up with Florida State, WVU, Wisconsin, and LSU were just great games. And, you know, all weekend. I mean, it started off last Thursday with the A&M game, and it just carried over to the weekend. So what a great way to kick it off.
Well, I have to agree. I really liked the 8:30 Saturday morning start of college football. But, man, it could – you know, instead of going from noon to midnight, it went from about 8:30 to midnight, and it was great. I enjoyed the heck out of it. Well, we're going to go ahead. We're going to talk about the big Penn State come-from-behind win over Central Florida in Ireland. We'll talk Temple rolling into the SEC country and spanking Vanderbilt. The Villanova Wildcats, their one-point double overtime loss at Syracuse, and then we'll roll around the country. We'll hit Ohio State, Wisconsin's meltdown at LSU. Rutgers even went on the road to Washington State and picked up a W. So we'll hit all those. We'll also hit some of the big games around the nation with Alabama, Florida State, Texas A&M looking fantastic, Georgia looked fantastic. So we'll hit them all, and we'll also see how we fared on our game picks this week, and we'll make our game picks for next week as there's several other big games. So we'll touch on all those things as we get through the hour. We're going to be busy tonight, fellas. So our www.southbeachshopping.com phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to call throughout the show. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Again, for those that might want to offer a comment but don't want to call, go to the Philly Press Box Facebook page and send a personal message, and we'll do our best to get your comments or questions on the show. All right. Well, Keith, I have two things before we get started that I wanted to hit you with, and you touched on it briefly there just a second, but how was Eggs and Kegs at Damon's and State College on Saturday morning?
It was fantastic. Like I said, what a great way to kick the day off and kick the season off. And walking in a bar, it was just, you know, you're getting up, it's still a little bit dark, and you're heading to the bar to watch a game. So just a fantastic day. You know, just you know, good people there. My wife works there. She's the bar manager down there. I actually have my radio show down there Thursday nights from Wednesday night from 6 to 8. We're down there, and it's a good place. Nice setup down there. You know, 6-7 inch TV, so it was nice watching the games. The announcing left a little something to be desired, in my opinion. We'll get into that. And the officiating was just as bad, in my opinion, but oh well.
Right. Well, tell us about your show. It's the Goon Show, right? And you're live at Damon's?
Yeah, it's the Goon Show. It's called the Goon Show with Sweeney. A partner is Tim Sweeney. Tim Sweeney played on the 86 National Championship team. Special teams player. Started a radio show about 3 years ago. Tim, in the meantime, has actually taken a head coaching job at his local high school called Derry Area down outside of Pittsburgh in the Latrobe area. So it's just me and my other partner, Rocco Petrilli. Brian Allen comes on with us sometimes. It's just all sports. It's a very, very Penn State-centric sports show. Actually, I just do want to promo a little bit for tomorrow night that Frank Gaynor, the offensive coordinator from the 1994 team, which is being honored this weekend with the 20-year anniversary of our Rose Bowl team and our Big Ten title team and some would say national title team. He's coming on the show for about the first 45 minutes of the show, so you can tune in at www.goonshowpsu.com. So.
All right, well, that leads me right into the second thing I wanted to ask you. We talked briefly last week about the reunion this weekend of the 1994 undefeated team. Any more news? I saw where you were passing around some hotel information. Any news on more players coming? And how about coaches? Are there many coaches left still around to be there?
Yeah, I actually heard their offensive line coach, Craig Servis, is coming into town for this. As of today, I believe it was, and we've just been, hammering out who's in and who's out, and, hearing the names of guys who are coming back, it's great. And, it's actually a lot more coming back that actually would not be, there's a lot more coming than there are not coming. Kerry Collins, Kyle Brady, Jada, our whole offensive line is coming. Actually, the whole 94 offense will be there. The one I was worried about was Bobby Engram because Bobby's coaching the Baltimore Ravens, and they open up Sunday. So they said he may actually just drive up for a quick hot second and see the guys and then head back to Baltimore for his game. So, I just can't wait. I mean, last weekend was just testing my liver and proving my liver I can still hang because this weekend I'm going to be stretched out a little bit. These guys talking about they're doing this and they're doing that. And, I live here in State College, so I understand that you don't want to hang out with the Young Bucks anymore because they can recover a lot faster. But it's funny seeing guys come back and try and relive it, and they pay for it all the day after. It's pretty funny. So I'm looking forward to it. Great guys. They're my guys. Guys I went to college with, guys I've known for 25 years. So can't wait.
Sure. Are most of them coming in on Friday night, or does it look like they'll be in Saturday for the game and then stay over Saturday night, or do the whole thing?
It's both. Some guys are just coming in Friday because they can't do the Saturday game, so they'll come in Friday for we're having a party. We'll have a get together Friday night, and then some guys like my younger brother Kevin, who was on the team, he was a redshirt freshman center. Funny story is. Kevin was a redshirt freshman, so he actually lettered in 1994 as the third-team center because the third team played so much that he was this backup center in 1995 and didn't get a letter. So that's a funny little story of how much how good we were with those guys, 13 guys playing enough to get letters. So he's coming in Friday night, spending the night, having a good time at the social. But then he's going to be back Sunday or Saturday, so he's not really going to be at the game. So some guys Friday, some guys Saturday, and, there's some guys coming in tonight or Thursday night through Monday. You know how that is. So.
Right. Well, sounds like a great time, and we want to hear all the stories about it next week when we get back together. I'm sure there will be a lot of good stories to tell and probably a whole bunch that probably shouldn't be told.
Yes, there's no doubt about that. You probably read some of them in the police blotter on Monday, so.
Well, hopefully it won't be that good a time or that bad a time.
All right. Hope we've all matured a little bit.
That's right. All right, well, let's take a look at this week's game, Penn State's 26-24 win over UCF on Saturday morning in Ireland. I wanted to throw out a couple real positives that I saw in the game, and then I'll turn it over to you guys, and then I'll hit you up with just a few negatives I had along the way, too. So here's what I got for my hot list of positives, and you got to start with Christian Hackenberg. Holy heck, 32 for 47, 454 yards and a touchdown. He did throw two interceptions. He was fantastic, as were both of his two of his receivers, Geno Lewis with 8 for 173, Deshaun Hamilton 11 for 165. It was a clinic for those guys. And, they didn't run the ball well, but Hackenberg sure made up for it, and a couple great plays by the receivers along the line. And so that's where I start my list. But I move on a little bit further, and I say third down efficiency in that game for Penn State. They were 10 for 18 on third downs, which is fantastic. They held the ball for 34 minutes and 7 seconds, which, you can't beat that as well. The total yards, 511 to 246 in favor of the Nittany Lions. And the defense, I thought, was out of sight. The Central Florida carried the ball 29 times for 24 yards in that game. I thought the defense played really, really well. I'll jump over to my negatives real quick, because I think they got a little conservative on defense, got a little too flexed there, and let Central Florida back in the game. I feel like Central Florida, Penn State should have blown them out. I think they outplayed them that much until late, and they were just giving up a little too much, and where Penn State ended up trading field goals for touchdowns, and that didn't work out very well. But Penn State also had some clock management issues, I think, there at the end, and obviously 9 penalties for 90 yards is too much. So I turn it over to you guys and see what you think based on some of those comments.
Terry,
go ahead.
Yeah. All right, no problem. Well, first and foremost, I mean, what a great win for Coach Franklin and for the Penn State program. Obviously, it's been a tough few years with everything going on with the transition with the new coach. So first and foremost, I think, you just want to give, Franklin and his staff just kudos for what they were able to do, because when you look at UCF as a program, I mean, this is a quality opponent. It wasn't like Penn State opened up with, Sisters of the Poor. I mean, UCF had, 9 starters back on defense, a defense that's really quality. I mean, that secondary will be one of the better secondaries that Hackenberg will face all season. So for them to pull out a victory in a game in which, as Bill pointed out, they most certainly could have won that game by 10 points, maybe even 14 points if everything fell right. So first and foremost, as a precursor to the rest of the season, I mean, the win itself against a quality opponent is most certainly a huge positive. As you mentioned, Hackenberg, I mean, my goodness. This guy, to me, was probably one of the more impressive quarterbacks that played all weekend. I mean, physically speaking, I mean, as we outlined last week, he's a three-and-done kind of kid. I mean, his physical tools are, in my mind, I mean, there's very few guys in college football that can sit there and make some of the throws that he made. I mean, as you mentioned, 54 yards, 32 for 47, school record, I believe, 454 yards. He does get a little lazy with his footwork every once in a while, but, with that kind of talent, with that kind of physical talent, you try to get away with certain things, and he does. He tries to force the issue here and there every once in a while, but that's okay. He's got a little bit of a gunslinger's mentality sometimes, and you want that to be your quarterback. As I was watching him play, I was trying to kind of, put in perspective and think about some guys in the NFL that, he reminds me of. And from a poise standpoint in the pocket and just his sense as he moves around there, he reminds me a lot of Matt Ryan. Now, he's more physically, gifted in terms of just pure arm strength, but just the way that he goes about doing things, he's a very mature sophomore. And that could be just with great coaching, it could just be that he's a very mature kid. But O'Brien did a great job with him last year and really, I think set him on the right path. And then this year, Franklin, they're doing a great job with him again. He's just such a wonderful player. I was just blown away by what he did on Saturday. And again, this is a quality secondary with an offensive line that was a little bit makeshift, as we know. As you pointed out, Bill, the wide receivers, Geno Lewis and Deshaun Hamilton, everybody was talking about, I was talking about last week, well, where's the production going to come from the wide receiver position? Well, Geno Lewis and Deshaun Hamilton, as you pointed out, 338 yards on 19 catches. There's the production. I mean, Hamilton was great, runs good routes, good hands, caught the ball in traffic, very smooth in and out, not really the burner. Geno Lewis, obviously, was a guy that, you know, made some really big plays. But you got to feel really good about, you know, what's going on there with that offense. And the defense, as you pointed out, really no surprise, I don't think, for any of us. You know, they're always solid on that side of the ball, and, you know, no exception against UCF. And UCF, look, the starting quarterback struggled, let's be honest. He wasn't very effective. The second guy that came in there probably should have been starting. You know, sometimes you have to wait till you get in a game situation to really see what you have. The second quarterback, Holloman, had, you know, much more efficient, and he did, you know, he was able to make some throws that the starting quarterback just couldn't make. But at the end of the day, 11 first downs and 246 yards, as you pointed out, with less than 1 yard per carry running the football. I mean, you're not going to win many games against quality teams like Penn State when you do that. So those are three of the positives, I think. And the negatives, you know, I think it's just we're going to see how things go. But the offensive line was really a mixed bag. I mean, there was some, you know, missed execution in the run, you know, specifically in the run game. I think in the pass game, they did a pretty good job of holding up. But 3 yards rushing in the first half for Penn State, are you kidding me? That's, you know, I've never seen a Penn State team not run the ball effectively. So, you know, that most certainly has to get better. And 57 yards for the whole game. So that's definitely something as you move forward, as you get into the Big Ten schedule and you play some of these physical teams. You know, Hackenberg can't throw the ball 47 times a game for them to be successful. And I think, you know, based on that game, that was a 50-50 game in my mind. Based on that win, I think it gives Penn State an opportunity to win, you know, 8 or 9 games if everything goes well. If all things are equal and there aren't injuries, you know, that was a big win for them. So the offensive line needs to get better. Like I said, there was some lack of execution, and I think they will get better over time, obviously, when they start to gel and play together. And as I said, kind of tying into to the first point, the run game. I mean, come on. Zwinek and Lynch and Belton, you know, these guys can get the job done. You know, obviously the offensive line is going to have to do a better job of blocking, but, you know, they definitely need, you know, we need more production out of those guys. And special teams, I mean, you were talking about some of the other negatives. You know, special teams was pretty good for the most part, but I still think they need to do a better job of the little things, the hidden yards, you know, the kick coverage, punt coverage, you know, the return game. It was a little bit better. But that's something that over the course of the season, I think Franklin and his staff will do a good job of really reiterating that, you know, sometimes in especially in these 50-50 games, the little things can make all the difference. So, you know, the hidden yardage is something that I want to see. And you outlined a lot of the other good stuff already. So that's kind of my take on it. I was really impressed with how they came out. And I think it really is a precursor for the rest of the season. I think, you know, we're going to talk about Akron later in the show, I believe. But, you know, I think Penn State, they're well on their way in 2014.
Very good analysis by both of you guys. I'm very impressive. You know, you know, Coach Franklin, what a great way to get off, you know, get off and get. You know, when you start your career, he's out there, he's 1-0 as the Penn State as the head Penn State football coach. I believe that Joe lost his first game. I believe, and I know O'Brien lost his first game, so he's got one up on them. So, you know, first things first. Obviously, the two bright stars are Hackenberg and how well the defense played. The defense was just, you know, constant defensive line pressure on the quarterback, you know, not letting them run the ball. Hackenberg, you know, he didn't get hit as much as I thought he would, but he was running for his life at times. They really have to shore up that offensive line run game and pass game, pass protection-wise. And, you know, what Terry said, you know, it's Penn State, you know, 3 yards rushing in the first half. That's not Penn State football. Now, it will be Penn State football. But, you know, maybe that's what South Florida said, you know. It's like, you're not going to run the ball on us, you know. You know, it goes back to the whole pick your poison. You can stop the run or stop the pass. But, you know, people are going to have to start sitting 4 or 5 guys deep with these receivers and tight ends and the way Hackenberg's throwing the ball. So when that starts happening, that's when the lanes are a little bigger and there's a one or two less guys to block as the offensive line guys. So time will tell on that. You know, having Hackenberg throw that many times for that many yards, which was a Penn State record, he's the first quarterback to ever throw for over 400 yards. Zach Mills had the record of 399. So, great job by Hackenberg, great job by the staff, getting him ready to go. Receivers outstanding, tight ends were outstanding, running backs. You know, I like their goal line package. They really went with the meathead package, put a couple offensive linemen in there, as long as Jesse James and but, you know, I think the unsung hero that whole day was that defense. I mean, everybody's talking about Hackenberg, but the way the defense played and pressured that quarterback, and really, you know, they caused commotion all day, and they drove you know, they were the driving force in that win. They came up big, and they gave up some stuff late in the game. You know, I'll sit there at halftime, it's 10-3, and you're looking at South Florida, or Southern Florida had 18 yards of offense. And you're just sitting there, I'm looking at my buddies, and I'm just like, you know what, this is one of those games. You should be up by 20 points if you hold a team at 18 yards. And, you know, we're only up 7 points. You just had that feeling. It was like one of those games. You had that feeling that we didn't, you know, we were going to wear down. We weren't going to get it done. It was going to end horribly, and it almost did. It was Sam Ficken, but Hackenberg lead the team down there, and getting Ficken in range to kick that field goal, you know, what a great way to start Franklin's career. What a great way to start the season. And, you know, I don't think Hackenberg should be getting a lot of hype and hype, but he keeps doing that. It's gonna follow him. So, you know, he's had some tough games. Like Terry said about the 50-50 games. I think two more games turned into 50-50 games watching Rutgers and watching Temple last week. I mean, you know, they were games that, you know, I definitely had Penn State winning, but you know what? Those teams look damn good, real good out there. So, I mean, Temple, well, we'll get into it. I know Bill wants to get into the local scene, but, you know, the Temple thing, I just, you know, that's a game that's down the road. We shall see. So, there we go. Go ahead, Billy. Back there.
Hello?
You guys back? Yeah. Hello?
Well, hello. Well, Keith, I'm not sure where where the host is.
Oh, it's just me and you. Yeah, I don't know if it's us, me, you. I know we're getting horrible rain. And at least I should have a tornado watch up here at State College. It's like one of those yellow days out there right now. So I guess we could just hang on here, right? Me and you, Ter?
We can hang on here for sure. So I think he wanted to talk about Akron and the upcoming home opener for Penn State. So why don't you give us a lay of the land there for the Nittany Lions at home?
Hey, so one of those classic, I mean, think about it. These guys are coming. I mean, everybody I've talked to who's come back from Ireland right now has said how hard it is adjusting back to the time. So now you're going to ask a football team to play a game Saturday afternoon in Ireland, come back. I mean, I know they left a lot earlier. They had a direct flight to Pittsburgh and then drove in from Pittsburgh. But I don't know. I think that it's going to catch up to Penn State. It was a fear from before, and it's an active fear. I mean, the people have to realize that these, you know, they played a game that was 6 hours ahead of us, and they flew back and flew there and flew back in 4 days, and it's bound to catch up to them. So I think that people are expecting Penn State to start slow, you know. Well, Akron come off a big win last Thursday night, so these MAC teams coming into Big Ten stadiums, this is their Super Bowl every year. You know, this is where they put their program on the map, beat Penn State at Penn State type of thing. So Penn State better be ready to play this game. I mean, I know they will be. I know it's like Temple Vanderbilt game. I know we'll talk about it later, but you know, I don't think Vanderbilt was ready to play that game against Temple last week. I mean, goes back to say how good of a staff that Coach Franklin and his staff are. You know, the way they handled Penn State and the way they handled Central Florida last weekend, but then look at what they left. I mean, they left Vanderbilt last year. That was a whole new staff down there they have. So they didn't look good. So,
hey, do I have you guys back?
Oh, we're back.
We're back.
Hey,
yeah,
I was listening to you.
Akron.
Yeah, oh, I was listening to you. We got the home opener with Akron, and what do you think? This is going to be a big Penn State win? Keith, blowout time.
I was just saying. I think, you know, I think that the jet lag and then this four days traveling across the country, across the road, across the pond, and back. I think it may catch up to the guys and not be as big a blowout as you think. Do I want it to be a blowout? Of course I do. But again, I say before about the these MAC teams coming into these Big Ten stadiums. This is their Super Bowl, so. Penn State better be ready. I think they're going to be on their toes. I think that Franklin won't let them put their laurels a little bit. I think he's worried about them. I mean, his whole plan was last week of getting these guys back to State College as fast as he possibly could to get them back on their regular schedule. have a Monday off from school, I think it'll be all right. But I think that, you know, it is an active concern, all these kids being a little jet lagged. So we will see. We'll see in that first quarter how these guys come out.
All right. Okay, well, let's run along. I'm sorry I lost you there for a little bit. We lost some time, but I wanted to hit on the – I know you guys started talking about that Temple game, and, you know, Matt Rhule, Penn State grad, he takes his Owls down to Vanderbilt in the Southeast Conference in a game that had all kinds of problems getting started with lightning delays for a couple hours, and they pick up 7 turnovers, and they roll Vanderbilt 37-7. Some interesting statistics in that game as well. You know, Temple was 2-for-17 on third downs and scored 37 points. Go figure that. But the only Vanderbilt points came off of a Temple fumble return. So yeah. The defense throws a shutout. They get 7 turnovers. The offense still a little, you know, P.J. Walker quarterback, he was efficient. He was 22-34, 207 yards and 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. But the defense was probably the story with giving up just 54 yards and 29 carries. Big, big win for the Owls.
Yeah, I'll take it from here, yeah. Great win for Temple, great win for Matt Rhule, good friend of mine. Obviously, Philadelphia is my hometown, so you know, I got a little soft spot in my heart for the Temple Owls, always have, and then, you know, even when Al Golden was there and now that Matt Rhule is there, I have more ties to them. Just a great program win. You know, we're sitting there watching a game, and it was late, and I didn't make it. I'm not going to lie. I got through about the second quarter, and I fell asleep, so... you know, I'm watching that game at 7-0 Temple, and then the punter gets a little high snap and drops the ball in the end zone. Vanderbilt recovers it, and I said, you know what? We're going to see how well these guys have learned and see what Matt Rhule can do, because that's the stuff that makes them lose games in the past. But it's always been that, you know, Sparty being Sparty is always how Michigan State loses those weird games. Well, Matt Rhule and Temple, they lose those weird games. I mean, their last year at Central Florida, they had that long bomb touchdown, and they lost to Fordham late in the game on a bomb. You know, so I'm watching that punt, and that punter dropped that ball in the end zone. Vanderbilt recovers, and I'm like, you know, they could crumble right here, and they did not. They did not crumble. They ended up scoring 30 more points, shutting them out the rest of the game. So they've actually grown, gotten better as a team, gotten better as a staff, so... You know, that's one of those games you got to chalk up now. It's kind of one of those scary games for Penn State in the future. And they have a tough one this week with Navy, so we're really going to see how good Temple is right now.
Exactly. Terry, what did you think? Did you get a chance to see any of that?
Yeah, definitely saw some of the game. Totally unexpected from the standpoint of when you look at Temple last year and they won 2 games. Obviously, they were competitive in some of those games, especially down, you know, towards the end of the season, but when you go into an SEC school, and I don't really care who it is, but, you know, at least perception-wise in their minds, you know, when you go down there and you get a quality win over an SEC opponent, as Keith said, in my mind, that is really, you know, that's a program-changing victory. And I was excited to see that for Temple. And as you outlined some of the stats, the game wasn't a very clean game. You know, 2-for-7 on third down, as you mentioned. You know, not the most efficient game for either side, but... you know, generating 7 turnovers against an SEC team for Temple, you know, that was fantastic. Gave themselves lots of opportunities to score some points. And on the other side of it, as you know, Keith had mentioned, you know, obviously the staff leaving Vanderbilt and coming to Penn State, Coach Franklin. My goodness, I mean, you know, you almost feel bad for, you know, an introductory game there for the new staff at Vanderbilt, and you know. With everything, you know, going on, the transition of having to start over, it wasn't a good look. And, you know, unfortunately for Vanderbilt, that's probably, you know, one of the more embarrassing, you know, things that's happened to the SEC in quite some time. But, again, program-changing, you know, victory for Temple. They do have a big game against Navy, and I think we're going to give our predictions on that later in the show. But I'm really anxious to see that game play out. I want to see... you know, Navy, and I mean, they're, you know, obviously Navy's a very difficult team to play against, as we saw this past weekend with Ohio State. So we'll see. Maybe Temple can surprise more people and start out the season 2-0.
All right. Well, let's move on. I wanted to hit the other local game because I thought it was a really interesting game. Unfortunately, I did not get to see this game, but I have read up on it a little bit. Maybe you guys got to see it. But the Villanova Wildcats going on the road to play Syracuse. They go to double overtime. They go for it, go for two, and end up losing 27-26. And, you know, they've done a great job at Villanova there for many years. And I guess, Keith, I want to throw at you as a former player, you know, are you happy going – your coach goes all in and, you know, you come up short rather than taking the tie and keep playing. That, you know, there's no moral victories in this game in my book. And Villanova statistically just dominated the game. They, you know, John Robertson had a heck of a game at quarterback, 199 yards passing, 115 yards rushing. Like I say, Villanova was probably in a place they shouldn't have been as far as – really handling Syracuse pretty well, and then they come out with an L because they went for two. What's your thought as a former player?
You know, as a former player, I mean, I grew up at a time when, you know, when it was two-point conversion, there was no tie. There was tie ball games back in the day. In my era, they didn't have overtime. So I know that Joe Paterno's rule was you go for two on the road, go for the tie at home. So, I mean, those rules have been thrown out the window ever since overtime has happened. I do not blame Andy Talley one bit for going for two on that because, you know what, he had to go 3 yards or 2 yards to win that ball game, and he said, you know what, he's a 1AA school player, a Division I school. You know, he's got to figure his guys are out of gas. You know, they had such a letdown by that kick missing the extra point, the really short field goal to end the game. They could have won the game straight out. The kid pushed it, whatever. So I think he could probably feel beat up and demoralized. I think he just said, you know what, it's it. We're going to go for the win, bottom line. We either win this game right now or we're going to lose this game right now. And, he crapped out, but you've got to give the guy some credit for it because he showed the intestinal fortitude to go for two. And, you know, it didn't work out, so he doesn't look that good. But you know what? They were there. I think it's going to be a bright season, as usual, for Bill Villanova. And if I'm Syracuse or a Syracuse fan, I'm a little scared right now. You know, I mean, you know, going against Villanova, I can't think you're overlooking a team like Villanova, but obviously they did. So, you know, we're going to have to keep an eye on Syracuse to see what's going on there because I think Villanova, they came out of a loss, but they have a lot of momentum on their side.
No, I agree. Okay, well, let's get our word in with our sponsors, and Terry, we'll come back and hit you up on the Big Ten right quick. But we wanted to say, do you like shopping online? And if you do, we've got the place for you. You can do all your shopping from one location and get cash back on your purchases from over 3,000 stores. It's the South Beach Shopping Mall without walls, and it's simple to do. Go to www.southbeachshopping.com. That's south-beach-shopping.com, and click on the top shop tab. From there, click sign in /register to become a preferred customer. That's it. You're free to look around at all the products and click on the all stores tab and check out over 3,000 plus network stores by alphabet. All the big stores are there. It's a great opportunity to get cash back and even comparison shop. And best yet, it's free to register. If you have any questions, click on the Contact Us tab on the home page or click on your shop consultant, South Beach Shopping, to leave a message. All right. Well, let's take a quick look around a couple of the Big Ten games and get your thoughts. First, Terry, I wanted to get you started off on Ohio State. They were in a dogfight with the midshipmen, as we discussed briefly, finally scoring a couple late touchdowns to make it look a lot worse than it was. Ohio State could not stop the run in that game. I want to talk about that. And the other is Wisconsin blowing the lead at LSU, losing in the fourth quarter. They give up 15 fourth quarter points. They had that game in the bag. And also wanted to catch you guys' thoughts on Rutgers going to Washington State and winning out there. What do you think, Terry?
Well, Bill, first with Ohio State, I will say this. I wasn't that surprised that the game was relatively tough for them. And I say that because – whenever you have these one-off games where you have teams preparing for another team for months as opposed to, you know, maybe a week, you got to lean towards the underdog to have a slight advantage. I mean, mentally, I'm sure Navy was was really up for the game. As Keith mentioned earlier about some of the MAC schools coming into play, some of the Big Ten schools, it's kind of the same premise here with Navy, even though Navy plays a lot of, big programs. But I wasn't surprised the game was tough. Now, with that said, 370 yards is 370 yards, and for Ohio State not to have the ability to at least slow that rush down a little bit, that's concerning. That is a little bit concerning, especially since, the front seven is really supposed to be the strength of that defense this year. Now, granted, anybody that's ever played the triple option themselves or played against the triple option, it's all about assignments. It's all about being in the right place at the right time. And as Keith said earlier with one of his other points, having the intestinal fortitude to man up and just, do what you're supposed to do and play tough football. And Ohio State, obviously, they weren't mentally ready for that game. They probably didn't want any parts of that triple option after a while, and they obviously really struggled there. But one of the other concerning things was their inability to run the football themselves. I mean, my goodness, watching that game, you think Ohio State, and they too have some offensive line issues, and they're going to, have to come together here very quickly as they play Virginia Tech this week. But not being able to run the ball against Navy very well is very concerning. The quarterback, Burnett, led the team in rushing with 50 yards. So, in the trenches, Navy, obviously, they're much smaller than their opponents, week in and week out. They just come to work, lunch pail in hand, and they're tough as nails. And they out-toughed Ohio State, and that's concerning from that standpoint. But again, when you play a triple option team, it's a whole different animal. It's a very tough, assignment oriented. You got to be very focused. You got to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and not trying to do too much. And I'm sure for some of those guys, they were probably caught in situations where they were trying to do too much. But Ohio State really struggled, as you mentioned. And at the end of the day, I mean. My honest opinion was that they weren't prepared, and they didn't prepare properly for Navy, and I think they may have been looking ahead to week two, which, I would imagine Urban Meyer was preaching that all week. But you know what? For any of us that have coached at the college level, one of the hardest things, I always tell people is you never know what you're going to get out of these young people week in and week out. You never know, who's going to come to practice prepared and ready to play, who's really listening, who's really intent on understanding the nuances of the game plan. So one of the harder things for coaches to do is to really, truly captivate their audience, the student athletes, especially when they have games like this where Ohio State's a heavy favorite and, like I said, Navy's an underdog. And, anytime you have that situation, especially with a team like Navy with the the Naval Academy, you get situations like this. So not that surprising. More surprising to me was their inability to run the football and to be efficient on offense. But, they came away with a win late in the game, as you said, scored a few late touchdowns. That game was much closer than the score indicated. So I'm not going to sit here and say Ohio State is not who we, think they are or thought they were or, might be. But I think they'll get it together, and I think they'll be much better this week against Virginia Tech.
Keith, what do you think about Ohio State, and what did you think about the Wisconsin game?
My fault right off the get going into the watching the Navy and Ohio State is you can't prepare for that triple option. I mean, you cannot prepare. Those kids are recruited to play the triple option. They're recruited to cut block, play the low block, this and that. You cannot practice against it, especially in camp. The risk of losing a kid to some scout team or foreign team play of them running the triple option. It's like one of those things. It's like you're not going to get any kind of live action until game time. You're not going to see the actual true triple option until game time. And when Navy's out there running the ball, running that triple option, and you have not seen it live, you've not practiced against it live because you can't afford to lose anybody in practice, in preseason camp, in spring ball, whatever, whatnot. You sort of could see how that was going to happen, but as the game wore on and then the game ended up, they scored a couple late puppies against Ohio State or against Navy, and that's how, they won by, 17 or whatever, but a lot closer than it really should have been. I think Urban Meyer saw one of those good things, learn from a bad thing, but it's still a win. Win's a win, but there's a lot of learning coming from that. Now, there's not to get anybody lightly, but then you see it coming because you don't want to play those triple option teams because you cannot, like I said, you cannot have it in practice. You don't know it. Don't see it live until the game time, and then it's too late. So You know, and then comes into my Northwestern. Northwestern was a very disappointing game this past weekend. Wisconsin really upset me because they did blow that fourth quarter lead. You know, the all game I was sitting there, and I had flightless friends in there. Oh, SEC is the best football, this and that. I'm like, it's not. I think it's overrated. You know, you watch these teams play, and they're in these shootouts, and it's like the easiest job to play in the SEC is a punter because you're hardly ever even used sometimes. You know, I'm watching that South Carolina Texas A&M game, but then I'm watching this LSU Wisconsin game. And Wisconsin is one of those Big Ten tough guy schools, and the fact that LSU took a couple haymakers, still came back, won that game, and then beat Wisconsin in the fourth quarter says a lot about LSU, in my opinion, because that's one of the bigger guys. And granted, I know the Big Ten has been down the last few years. I don't know if this year is going to be any better, whatever, whatnot. But, you know, losing a 15-point lead has got to hurt Wisconsin. It's got to hurt them bad and do nothing but good things for LSU and their, you know, their spirits of coming back. The game they had no right winning that game, none whatsoever. Wisconsin won that game. They should have put them away, put them out of their misery early, but they showed a lot of it. Plus, they're fortitude yet again by coming back and beating Wisconsin.
Yeah, I personally think with Wisconsin, as you mentioned, obviously one of the more physical teams. Melvin Gordon didn't play a whole lot in the second half, which was interesting. And apparently there was a little bit of miscommunication with maybe a potential injury. But, you know, how can Melvin Gordon only get 3 carries in the second half? That to me is crazy. And the quarterback play. I mean, at the end of the day, when LSU was starting to kind of put things together in the second half, you know, McAvoy just he wasn't efficient. 8 for 24 for 50 yards. That's just not good enough. And, you know, LSU obviously struggled as well throughout the game, but, you know, they obviously have weapons where they can, if they get the ball out there in space, they can do some different things, which they did at the end of the day. But, Wisconsin, they've done this in the last couple years. You know, they've in some ways choked away some of these games. The Arizona State game the year before. They haven't won a lot of big games in the Rose Bowls. Obviously, they've struggled there to at least win the games. They've been competitive. They just haven't won those big games. But when your quarterback is 8 for 24 for 50 yards, you know, even with that 24-7, you know, lead, you know, it's got to be better than that. And, you know, for Wisconsin, you do feel bad for them. But LSU, as you pointed out, Les Miles always has a little bit of magic, and that LSU team is very, very talented. If they can, you know, they have some young players playing, especially a wide receiver, and one of their big prospects didn't play because he was sick. You know, once they get everybody on the same page, LSU has a chance to be pretty good this year, I believe. And then the news came out today. I don't know if you guys saw this, but the starter from last year, Stave, at least towards the end of the season, he's injured, so he's not going to be back for a while. So that's the main reason why he wasn't starting in this game. If he plays this game, I don't think Wisconsin loses. But, you know, they had to go with what they had. But, very, very, very concerning for Wisconsin that they, you know, they're going to have to get better at the quarterback position if they want to win some of these games against really good opponents.
You know, that fourth quarter, watching him back there, he had the happiest seat I think I've seen in a long time. You know, he started to get hit a little bit, and then he wanted nothing to do with stepping into the pass, stepping into the throw. And, you know, LSU just fed off of that, absolutely just fed off of it.
Yeah, he's a converted, you know, he's more of an athlete, you know, a guy that can run the ball a little bit more, which, you know, you understand he's going to struggle a little bit as, you know, getting acclimated again to being in the pocket and playing that position, but you know, if you're Wisconsin, you can't go into a season where you have that situation. I mean, unfortunately, you know, they did. But, you know, really it's sad because they played so well through two and a half, three quarters. But LSU, as you pointed out, they always find a way to, the Les Miles magic. Maybe he ate some grass, you know, before the fourth quarter and got the guys fired up. But LSU is going to be a good team, guys. I really believe that. Towards the end of the season, I think you're going to see them be one of the front runners for the SEC championship.
You're talking about Miles eating grass. I ended up eating a whole lot of loudmouth soup Sunday morning when I had to wake up and responded to all my texts. I was sending all my SEC buddies and this and that. And, you know, I tried to avoid them all day Saturday night, but, you know, come Sunday, I couldn't hide them. I was bad, you know, just, you know, because I was just saying, it was just a frustrating loss. And I'll say about as frustrating as watching California, who had one or two wins last year, just come in to Northwestern and just dismantle them. I mean, that was definitely one of the bigger surprises of the Big Ten, but also one of the most, it was by far the most disappointing. By far.
Yeah, well, I wanted to throw out that other Big Ten game out there for you guys, and Rutgers making their first appearance in the Big Ten and going out to Washington State, winning that game 41-38 with 1,034 yards of total offense in that game. Rutgers didn't play much defense either, giving up 532 of them, but they had nearly 500 yards of offense themselves. I don't know if that means anything moving forward or what, but good win for the Scarlet Knights.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go ahead and take this one first. I thought the game was absolutely intriguing. I think both quarterbacks played really well. You know, Gary Nova's been kind of an enigma. You know, he's struggled through the course of his career. And, you know, granted, he's had multiple offensive coordinators there at Rutgers. They've been pretty fluid there. But I thought he played really well. He's got all the physical tools to be effective. Paul James, their running back, is going to be one of the more underrated players in the Big Ten. This guy can play. He's a really good running back. He runs behind his pads. He breaks arm tackles. The guy's fast enough. He can hit a home run if he gets out there in space. Really tough, durable guy. He can catch the ball. You know, I was really excited about Rutgers and what they were doing out there. And as you said, whenever you play Mike Leach in Washington State, you know it's going to be like, I equate it to, like, you know, street ball and basketball. I mean, the plays they, I mean, schematically, everything they do is just kind of like Wild West, and they're just pitching the ball over the field. They don't even run the ball. I mean, Mike Leach would literally throw the ball every play if he could. So for Rutgers to pull out a win on the road, like that, I think you got to be excited for Rutgers, and I think that they're going to be tougher than I think a lot of us thought they were going to be in the Big Ten. And I'll tell you what, when some of these teams have to go into New Jersey and play Rutgers at home, there's going to be some tough games. I mean, people are going to know that Rutgers is there to play. They're going to be competitive, and like I said, they have some skill players that can really make plays. I mean, it's not like, you know, these guys are just, you know, methodically going about. I mean, they were pushing Washington State. And this Washington State team, this is the same team that beat USC last year. And I know USC was under a lot of turmoil. There was a lot of things going on. But they also played Auburn very closely in that opening game. And they should have won the game. They should have beat Auburn in week one last year. And a lot of the same players are back on this Washington State team. So, in my opinion, Rutgers, I mean, that was one of the better wins, I think, this past weekend. I mean, it was a tremendous victory for them. And like I said, being one of the new teams in the Big Ten, they're going to be more competitive than I think a lot of us thought they were. And I really like that running back, Paul James. Look for him to be one of the better performers at that position in the Big Ten.
All right. Good deal. Okay, time's getting away from us, so let's take a quick look at some of the big games from around the country during the week. And I think it was Joe Paterno's old quote that is pretty fitting for this week. You're never as good as you think you are when you win, and never as bad as you think you are when you lose. I think we saw some highs and lows for a lot of teams. Texas A&M and Georgia looked tremendous. USC rolled up 701 yards in total offense in Steve Sarkisian's first game. But then again, Florida State, Alabama, UCLA were middle of the road, and South Carolina and Clemson were just awful. What's your take, Keith? What did you take out of these other big games around the country? And other than Todd Gurley, who was just ridiculous with 198 yards, three touchdowns, and a 100-yard kick return, who caught your eye?
Obviously, the Texas A&M game Thursday night with Hilt playing quarterback, and you know, I never thought I'd actually hear them not say, you know, he's not Johnny Manziel, which was how they started off all night. But the performance that he put on in his first game was just unbelievable. And, you know, how Texas A&M played, how they won that game, how their defense played, and just humiliated South Carolina at a home opener. I would not want to be a South Carolina football player come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this past week for practice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Spurrier just, you know, beat them up good, and, you know, just had to have some very, very tough practices. Now, Spurrier is an old-school, old-time football coach. We're going to see, as you just said about Joe Paterno, you're never as good as you are when you win, you're never as bad as you think when you lose. See how these teams react. See how the South Carolina team comes out this week. See how this Clemson team comes out this week. You know, Wisconsin, how are they going to rebound after that tough loss? You know, how are they going to come back after all these bad games? You know, the one that really surprised me was UCLA. You know, UCLA was one of my, you know, I would say, I guess, dark horses, I guess, because I have USC out of the Pac-12, but, you know, you have Oregon there, but I thought UCLA would have a much better game. And, you know, Virginia gave them everything they could handle. I think that UCLA had to have 3 defensive touchdowns to win that game.
Yep.
3 defensive touchdowns. Are you kidding me? You know, I mean, UVA, you get 3 defensive touchdowns, you win by 40 points, not by 6 or 7 points. You know, UCLA really needs to look at itself. Maybe they're reading the clippings a little bit too much. And sometimes that's pretty good. A little eye wake, a little wild pass soup, a little smack in the face from your opponent, a la Ohio State, a la UCLA. Yeah, they're going to react to it. I mean, they're going to come out this week, and I guarantee you're going to see different teams. South Carolina, Ohio State, Wisconsin, UCLA. You're going to see a different team out there. And if not, they're in trouble. So,
I agree. Terry, what was the biggest shock game out of those big ones for you or individual player?
Yeah, I think for me, UCLA was also a little bit of a shock. And I say that with a little bit of tempered enthusiasm because I did pick UCLA to win the South, but after watching them play offensively, and I kind of knew going in that they were going to struggle a little bit because they don't have a lot of playmakers at wide receiver. They just don't. And at running back, it's been a mixed bag the last couple of years. Perkins is a pretty good player, but their offensive line has been makeshift the last couple of years as well. They've had a lot of injuries there. And Brett Hundley, a lot of people, you know, kind of gravitate towards these teams with that one marquee player. And UCLA, in my mind, is probably going to end up being one of those teams that when we look back at this season, after it's done, we're going to say, wow, we kind of missed on that one. So I think that people are going to kind of revise their outlook on UCLA. And I was shocked from the standpoint of they really couldn't do anything at all against Virginia, like literally nothing. They couldn't move the ball. They couldn't keep him upright. He got sacked, you know, it was 5 or 6 times there, you know, early in the third quarter. They just struggled offensively. And defensively, look, they were kind of fluky plays where they scored some of those touchdowns. So, you know, they did not dominate Virginia. In fact, Virginia pretty much outplayed them the entire game. So UCLA was a little bit of a surprise just because I thought offensively, even though they don't have a lot of dynamic guys on offense, I felt like, you know, they would be able to move the ball a little bit more effectively. So that was definitely a surprise. Alabama was a little bit of a surprise. You know, Lane Kiffin, his first game as the offensive coordinator there for Alabama, you know, he did a really good job with Sims. I mean, Sims was – well, he's not the most polished passer in college football, as I kind of mentioned in our last roundtable. But he did a really good job, and when they went up-tempo, it really kind of settled him down and allowed him to just kind of play and not think as much. And, you know, I think if they keep things simple, which is very difficult for Lane Kiffin to do, I'm very familiar with him and his coaching style. He's very complex. It's very intricate what he does there. You know, it's a pro-style offense, which Saban's been running for a while, but a lot of his verbiage, a lot of the players in the past that have played for him have complained that the verbiage that they use and, you know, the play calling. A lot of times you'll see Lane Kiffin, it'll take 15 or 20 seconds to get the play in. You know, a lot of the players, you know, they just struggle with, you know, with the way he kind of conducts certain things. But, you know, he did a good job. The defense, what really surprised me about that game was Alabama's defense didn't play very well. And, again, I totally understand that in some of these one-off games where teams have a ton of time to prepare for you, that you're going to have some of these games where, the outcomes might be a little bit unexpected. But I thought Alabama was good. They weren't as good as I thought they might be. And offensively, you know, as long as you can turn around and hand the ball off to Henry and Yeldon and guys like that, and you have an offensive line with that much talent, you know, you're going to win a lot of those games. But for me, I still feel, you know, they're going to have to get better at the quarterback position, whether it's Sims, whether it's Coker. There's going to be games in the SEC schedule where against LSU and against some of these other teams with good deep Georgia, you know, if they end up playing Georgia in the SEC championship, they're going to have to throw the ball more effectively. And I know he had 250 yards, but if you watch, you know, if you think about that game and how it transpired, you know, some of those throws were, you know, relatively, you know, easy and simple for him to get the ball out. So I was a little bit surprised with Alabama's effort. And FSU, obviously, it's going to be difficult for FSU to live up to what happened last year, even for, you know, for Jameis Winston. I mean, anytime we've seen a returning Heisman Trophy winner, Jameis Winston could have thrown for 500 yards and it wouldn't have matched, you know, our perception of who he is and what he did last year. So I wasn't that surprised that there was a little bit of a hangover for Florida State. They're a really good team. They're Alabama and Florida State are probably the two most talented teams if you're just looking at rosters. So I think they'll both right the ship. And, you know, when you look at the ACC and what's going on there, I don't really feel there's any team that's going to be able to beat them. Although that Louisville game on a Thursday night is going to be really interesting down the road. USC did look great. You know, Sark and the boys rolled up 701 yards, as you mentioned, prior to the show. And Fresno State, I want to put this out there. I don't know if this game's going to be on our schedule to pick, but in 2 weeks when Fresno State hosts Nebraska, Nebraska better watch out. Fresno State's a good team. That 52-13 score, I don't think that's indicative of who Fresno State is. Nebraska is on upset alert already going into next
wow.
week against Fresno State. Fresno State is going to be a tough out for them. Fresno State has a very tough schedule. If they can get the quarterback play under wraps, Nebraska better watch out in week three. So that's an early shout-out there for Fresno State. Georgia-Clemson, as you guys, I know you guys both love Georgia, and Georgia is an extremely talented team. Todd Gurley, I mean, my goodness, he's the best back in the country. There's no question about that. The quarterback situation, I don't think I'm totally sold yet on what's going on there, and we'll see how that plays out. But defensively, you got to give Georgia a lot of credit. One of the things that they've really struggled with statistically is just been their defense. I mean, they've had tons of talent, tons of NFL talent that they've sent, you know, the last couple years there through the draft. But Jeremy Pruitt, the new defensive coordinator for Georgia, is a heck of a football coach. He was the coordinator last year for Florida State, kind of turned things around for them on defense, and he did a great job with Georgia. Clemson very much is a plug-and-play type of system, and they shut Clemson down. They literally shut them down the second half, and I know Clemson struggled a little bit. They lost a lot of guys, Sammy Watkins, Taj Boyd. We know who they lost, but still, that system is very much like an Auburn system where you plug and play, and, Georgia and Clemson, I was impressed. I was really impressed with Georgia. I do feel that it's going to be an interesting game next week. South Carolina is going to be ready to play. As Keith mentioned, you know, the old ball coach is one of the best coaches in college football. We know that. He's going to have those guys ready to play. They were not prepared. They were not ready to go against Texas A&M. Texas A&M, you know, they have tons of talent. There's no question about that. I don't think Texas A&M is quite as good as they showed, but I don't think South Carolina is quite as bad. So I'm really looking forward to next week when we got a couple of those other games. But South Carolina, Georgia, we're going to find out who they really are in that game.
All right. Well, we got to move on real quick because we're almost out of time. Let's go ahead and quickly review last week's predictions. I am the leader with 5 wins and a loss. Keith is second at 4-2. Terry was 2-4. So
wow.
Predictions are up for this week. Here we go. We're just going to have to throw out the names here. We're not going to be able to say too much about this, okay? Akron at Penn State. Keith.
Come on. Seriously? Penn State.
Terry.
Penn State, 31-13.
Bill is also taking Penn State. Navy at Temple. Keith.
Temple.
Terry.
That's a tough one. I'm going to have to go with Navy. As you mentioned, Keith, after you said all that great stuff about the triple option, you went with your heart and you went Temple. I'm going to go the other way and go Navy.
They have live
I want to go with
though.
My I want to go with my heart and take Temple, too, but I'm going to take Navy as well in that one.
Yes. Game changer.
Fordham at Villanova. I really know nothing about this game, but, Keith, you're up.
I'll take my boys from Villanova.
Terry?
Let's go Nova.
I'm going Nova, too, just because. All right, here you go. Number 15, USC at number 11, Stanford. Keith?
Let's go Sark.
All right, Terry, I know you're going Sark.
This is a really tough one. Cody Kessler was out of practice today. Leonard Williams rolled an ankle. Damian Mom on the starting guard also hurt his knee. Lots of injuries are starting to pile up. They have multiple offensive linemen that are banged up. They have one of their running backs, their star running back, hasn't played and won't play in this game. Stanford's very physical. It's quite the rivalry now between USC and Stanford. I really like what Sark did, though. I think they'll find a way to spread Stanford out a little bit. And I think Stanford isn't quite what they've been, so I'm going to go USC in a close one.
I'm going to go Stanford. Michigan State at Oregon. Keith.
Let's go Sparty. I think it's Sparty's coming out party. That's what I'm going to go with it.
Terry.
Wow, this is a tough one. This is a really tough one. Michigan State, I really like what they're doing as a program. But I'll tell you what, for anybody that's ever gone up there and played at Oregon, good luck. I'll take Oregon.
Yeah.
I'm taking Michigan State. Michigan at Notre Dame. Keith.
I hate to say it, but let's go Wolverines.
Terry.
I'm going to go, and I hate to say it as well, I'm going to go Notre Dame.
Oh.
I really hate to say it, and I'm going to go Notre Dame. Sleeper game, Virginia Tech at Ohio State. Keith.
I think it's going to be an absolutely fantastic game. Love it. I think Ohio State is getting their crap kicked out of them by Urban Meyer this week. I think they're going to come out with a points proof next week, and I think they're going to...
Terry.
I'm with Keith on this one. I like Ohio State. I think they'll bounce back, and I think the offense will play better. They'll run the football better, and I think the defense will be outstanding in this game. I like Ohio State.
I'm taking Ohio State, too. All right, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed our show. Thank you.